And it is now 12:30. So Steve Hodges is our honored guest from AT&T. Mr. Hodges is the region president for Northeast for AT&T Mobility. So AT&T Mobility is the wireless division, obviously the biggest segment within AT&T. And they divide their wireless business up, they divide the country up into four regions. So he's responsible for 14 states, everything from Maine all the way over to Michigan and on down to Washington, D.C., so a huge swath of the country and some very, very important geographies. Also, what I thought was very interesting, he's been in this position since 2004, so a decade, if I did my math right. And you know, there, if, for those of you who know the telecom industry, the wireless industry, it's been a pretty exciting time. AT&T, if you remember, was the carrier that launched the iPhone, and it was so successful, it put some stress on the network. Now we're talking about launching a fourth-generation LTE wireless network, and I think AT&T has some news to talk about today at our conference. So very pleased to have Steve here. Before I turn it over to Steve, I also want to publicly thank AT&T as a company. There's a lot of companies out there that talk about supporting veterans and disabled veterans, but AT&T is unrivaled, in my opinion, and in the experience of Drexel Hamilton, and it's really across the board, a number of initiatives that AT&T has, and I don't think I can include them or even count them all, but AT&T has purchasing initiatives to ensure that a certain percentage of all the purchasing they do is from minority-owned firms, including service-disabled veteran-owned firms. They have training programs to help mentor and train service-disabled veterans. You know, in our business, if you look at every single capital raising when AT&T refinances their debt, there's always minority and disabled veteran firms in there. And then just lastly, this conference alone, as soon as we asked AT&T, they were eager to present, so very, very supportive. So AT&T really walks the walk and talks the talk. AT&T is very, very supportive of veterans and, in particular, disabled veterans. So with that, I hope I didn't embarrass you too much, Steve, but I'll turn the event over to you.
Thank you, Barry. Appreciate it. Well, how's everybody doing? Enjoying your lunch? Good, good. All right, I got a lot to talk about today. We got about, I think, an hour all in with some questions, right?
Sure.
About an hour with questions. I'm going to talk to you a little bit about AT&T's business, what's going on with our mobility business right now, particularly from a growth perspective and what we're doing. But before I get there, first I want to, and I am obligated, to highlight that, you know, some of this that I'm going to talk about today, you know, could change. I'm giving you some forward-looking comments. So as I bring up the safe harbor statement, I really need to talk about that in advance a little bit. So I may talk about some things that are forward-looking, give you some sense of what's going on inside our business, what's driving some of the values of our business today, and you know, just let you know that there's always some risk in that. Things can change and whatever. So you can also read this if you want to read it in detail. I'm sure as you're eating, it would be a good thing to read if you want to, but it's out there on our SEC filings and also on our corporate website. Let's talk a little bit about, and Barry, thank you for that. You know, I appreciate what you said about our involvement with the military and some of our outreach programs. And we are very proud of these. Some of these I've been personally involved with, and I'll bring that up. But these are just some of the programs that we're involved with. You know, we couldn't be prouder of what the young men and women are doing in active services right now, in active duty across the country to really protect us and our freedoms. It's a scary time for all of us, I think, as Americans. And so we just couldn't be prouder of the kind of people that I met today, and I feel humbled actually to be with you to some degree for what you've all experienced and what you've done for us as a country and as individuals. So thank you all for that very much. As a company, what are we doing? You know, first and foremost, you know, recruiting and hiring military veterans. We've been doing this for a long time, and we don't do it just because it's a good thing to do. It's the right thing to do. They're great people. They're great employees. They come with great skills, discipline, great training as you're getting here in Drexel Hamilton. So we've been doing this for a long time, and we feel really good about that. And there's an active program inside our company with a group that's organized around doing that. So we feel good about that. Second is Jobs for Veterans. This is a pretty big program from us, and our chairman has committed to hire up to 10,000 veterans over the next 5 years. And I'm happy to say that we're making progress on that. So we feel good about that. The third one is a program that I feel pretty connected to, Cell Phones for Soldiers. This is a fantastic program by this innovative 16-year-old girl from Boston, Massachusetts. I was the one that got the first email from her. And when you get an email from a 16-year-old kid with an idea that just sort of blows you away, you just feel great about America, but you also realize the spirit of some of these kids and the willingness to help and serve others. And her email said something to the order of this, and I actually have it framed in my office. I haven't read it in a couple weeks, so I probably should have. But she was 16-year-old, and she said, my brother and I, who was 14, named Robbie Berquist, was Brittany Berquist was her name, sent me a note and said, I'm trying to do something to help military personnel stationed overseas. And I find that they're challenged in a lot of ways communicating back to the United States. So I've come up with this idea where I'm collecting used cell phones, breaking them down for their value, selling those components, buying AT&T long-distance calling cards, and then mailing them overseas to she's 16 years old. She's doing this in her garage. It's unbelievable, the innovation, and just the energy behind this kid. And primarily it was because her cousin was overseas and she wanted to help him. So we stepped in and said, hey, maybe we can help. Let's try testing something out in Boston. We put these boxes in our company-owned stores up in the Boston market, and we said, let's see what happens if we talk about this a little bit. And she turned out to be a brilliant PR kid. I mean, one of the most unbelievable PR engines I've ever seen, this young lady. She got out on the Boston media, talked about the story, and these boxes were filling up in our store. And so we looked at it and said, holy cow, this is a little bit too big for your garage, because we realized the 18-wheelers filling in the garage was probably a little too much for them at that state. So we helped them with their operations. We built them a flow to protect the privacy of information that could be left in these phones and other things. But essentially, this thing scaled up so fast that we took off and launched it across the whole Northeast in my territory, and then ultimately across the nation. And so this girl, young lady, was just amazing what she did to help people. And with anybody with that spirit, we were happy to get behind her and help her scale that. And it's just been a fantastic experience for all of us. So that was the cell phones. Brittany's in college these days, so best of luck to her. And the last one is just really around supplier diversity. And Barry, you hit that a little bit. Mm-hmm. Our commitment is about 21.5% of our supply chain folks we're sourcing to, we're buying from minority and women-owned businesses. But within that, it's about 1.5% from disabled veterans who own and run those companies. So we feel good about these initiatives. We're fully committed, and we really do welcome and thank you for having us here today. So here's what I'm going to talk about a little bit is about our mobility business and what's going on inside our business. It's a fun time to be in mobility. As Barry said, I've been in telecom for 30 years and 10-plus years in mobility, just 10 in this job. I've been in other jobs. But it's just one of the most exciting areas to be in because change is, like, daily. And that makes it just invigorating for us to get up every day and say, what happened today? What do we have to do today? But for us, it's not a matter of the change. It's just the excitement and the vigor of what's going on and the kind of what people use and what they do with what we do. Right? We provide beautiful networks for people, voice and data, and it's what they use and need every day and all day. So it's just been a fantastic time. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about transforming our business, revenue growth opportunities for us as we see them both on existing products and new products. Talk about the competitive landscape, which is pretty active at the moment, but we feel good about it. And a little bit about some reorgs that have recently taken place in AT&T to help us even grow further. And we'll do some Q&A, and then we'll be all set. So first up, here we go. So what's going on? We're talking about transforming our company and our business. We've been in front of Wall Street and talking to our analyst communities, investor communities a lot over the last few years about transforming our network. We've talked about an all IP networks. We've talked about Project VIP is probably a term many of you have heard. And we're feeling really, really good about the success there. This is rolling out a nationwide IP-based network for mobility purposes. And we're making a tremendous amount of progress. Actually, today we announced that we hit our 300 million POPs with our LTE deployments. So that was what we committed to by the end of the summer. And I think we made that. So we love to hit our commitments. And we actually made that. So we feel great about what's going on our network. But when we talk about the business side, there's really a couple things that we're doing to transform the business side of our business. And first, we made some changes a few years back, actually 2 years ago, to switch from an old pricing model based on tier contracts to a usage-based model where customers are incented to buy bigger data buckets, essentially. Mobile share was the name of the pricing plan, and we made that decision about 2 years ago. Since then, we've changed that, and we've actually gone from a 2-year contracted subsidized pricing model to a non-subsidized pricing model. I'm going to dive into that a little bit in a minute. And it has affected a lot of change within our business. It is affecting certain things within the economics as you study our business and how you look at it. And I'll give you some insights on how that's going and how that's going to come around. But first up, even before I get into some of those details, how are we doing with our basic business and smartphones? Everybody here, I'm sure, is carrying some form of a smartphone. Anybody that has a phone that's at least 6 months to 9 months old probably wishes they had a brand new one, right? Anybody out there not agree with that? Yeah, you do. I know you do. I mean, there's nothing like it. Everybody wants, like the computer. Somebody's got something faster, you got to have it. Well, cell phones have gone to that same degree. And the innovation cycle around these devices is quick. I mean, there's always a bigger screen, a faster processor, something going on that somebody wants that. Everybody wants that. And so as we look at cell phones and just basic smartphones, we still see a lot of upside, a lot of growth in the in just smartphones. We've grown inside our base about 5 million smartphones year over year. And we're about 80% of our base is smartphones. We're probably one of the highest on that. But we also see a significant growth because our gross ads, our new subscribers, are actually coming in and buying iPhones, or not just iPhones, but just buying smartphones at about a 92% rate. So there's upside in that. So we feel good about that. That's sort of the foundation of our business is what's going on with smartphones. Usage-based pricing, I hit that a little bit. A lot of this was just getting out of any unlimited data pricing plans and making our pricing such that people were incented to buy bigger data buckets and connecting more things to their account. So as I talked a minute ago about the newer getting out of device subsidies, most of you are familiar with this. Device subsidies, you come in, you buy a brand new phone, smartphone, you put it on a 2-year contract, you walk out the door for $199, but that's not what we paid for it. Right? You can go out and look on our price cards. Our price cards, a very high-end smartphone, might have been $650 to $700. Okay? And so the problem with that is customers didn't necessarily appreciate the value of the smartphone, the full value of it. They thought it was $199. So if something happened to that phone, they came back in and wanted another $199 phone. Well, under that 2-year contract, that was not their obligation. So we felt it was time to move on beyond the subsidized model. And essentially what we did is we did two things. We now let customers acquire their own handsets, whether it be through a financing plan, and our plan is called Next. But what we did is we reduced, so if you come and buy your own device and bring your own device, either through Next, or you bring your own device, or you buy it outright, so you paid $640, you get the ability to get on our new no-subsidy pricing plan. In this case, it's called Mobile Share Value. And so what we did is we essentially took out the price of the subsidy that was based on those subscription, and we basically took it out. So if you bring your own device, either through a financing model or you bring your own, you get the reduced rate on our Mobile Share Value pricing going forward. So that is a good thing. To customers, they love it. Inside that, we give them some mechanics where they can now upgrade their phone every 1 year, every 18 months. And as I said, I don't know about you, but I switch phones about a lot. I know my family does too. My kids, 6 kids, they love to get that new phone. The one thing they're banging me on all day is, Dad, the brand new Android came out, the brand new something came out. They want it. So just that upgrade cycle is one of the key things that customers wanted to know more about and wanted to get involved with. So this next plan is driven heavily by that ability, customers to upgrade their phone. You look at the economics, what it did to our metrics, is an old metric that everyone's familiar with that studies our industry is ARPU. ARPU is based on subscription revenue. When we took the subscription cost out of our service pricing, it actually brought ARPU down. But all it did is it shifted it to an equipment revenue line. So if you study ARPU, you're going to see a step function. But if you add back the next subscription revenue that we get monthly, you're essentially building yourself right back up. So as you're studying our market and our industry, it's really important to see that. Some of the side benefits in addition to this is customers understand the value of their device. They realize they're carrying around a $650 piece of equipment, not $199 equipment. They tend to take better care of it. And so the way it went from our business perspective, that means they're coming in, they're putting a case on it, a screen protector, and they're putting insurance on that product at a much higher rate. So there's secondary benefits to changing the pricing model. Another benefit is we shifted this pricing model to be more data-centric, where people come in now, buy a big data bucket, and share it. We're seeing people add a lot more new things to their shared data bucket, whether it be tablets, MiFi pucks, all kinds of different things. So we like this. We like where we are. We're happy with the progress that we've seen, and it's been pretty good. And we talked a little bit about, in first quarter, about 40% of our new ads were on Next. Into the second quarter, we're about 50%. Since then, we've added more distribution channels. And as we look at the rest of the year, we know this is going to ramp up because you do a lot more upgrades in the back half of the year. Our business is very much driven by the seasonality and holidays. So it's a retail-type business. So So typically in the fall, there's a large iconic product launch. There may be more than one, but there's one particularly. And that brings a lot of upgrade volume. Upgrade customers are at a very high rate eligible for this product. Not every customer is eligible for Next, and we did constrain a bit the credit classes. But upgrade customers are eligible at a very high rate. So we see the back half of the year, tremendous growth in Next. As you get into Christmas and Black Friday, again, just giant volume. So we like where this product is going, we like where we are, and we really like the way this looks as we look at the rest of the year. The next piece is around prepaid. So we bought a company, Leap, Cricket. We bought them, earlier in the year, and we're in the process of integrating not just their network, but also the business operations. So their sales distribution is being rebranded. We had to move some of the customers to new handsets, so we're in the process of flipping people to a new handset so they get access to our LTE network. So we see a lot of growth on that, and it's a non-branded AT&T branded product, so it gives us a lot of flexibility with pricing. So if we feel like we want to get aggressive, we can do that without exposing our postpaid business. So as we look at this, I think a lot of upside. We're in the middle of this transformation. Again, our network is well along the path of transforming to a fully IP network, but when we look at the business, we like what these pricing models have done, we like what it's doing for customers, and we're seeing some upside in it. Next up is just, so what are our revenue growth opportunities? Data is where it's going. So most of these products are going to sit on our voice and data networks. So first up is smartphones. Again, as I talked about, there's upside just in smartphones. If you take the non-smartphone to a smartphone, your average revenue per user doubles. So you see almost 2x. Alright, so it's a great thing to migrate people to the higher end products. And so just a lot of upside in there. Next up is tablets. When you look at the tablet business, this is still a tremendous amount of upside. It's an underpenetrated part of the business, and it's beautiful because customers get it. I mean, anybody here who's operating with iOS, you can go from, an iOS smartphone to an iOS tablet with no problem. If you're on Android, you can do the same. If you're on Windows, that's the same thing. So the beautiful thing is it doesn't take a lot of training for customers to understand the value of tablets, and we're seeing a lot of growth. And we saw a lot of growth in our 2Q earnings, about 344,000 net adds, postpaid net adds as a result of tablets. We see that continuing to grow and feel really good about it. Beautiful thing there. They can add them onto that mobile share value plan, put it on the big bucket. They don't need to do anything different. So they've got that data bucket. We're also seeing our revenue driven from the data buckets grow as we start to add tablets and other products like that, data products to our service lineup. We're starting to see pretty big shifts of the number of customers that are buying are much, much bigger data buckets. So great news, and again, another upside for us from a data perspective. Digital Life product, that's probably one of my favorite products. I could sit here and talk to you about that for hours. If you haven't seen it, please go to one of our retail stores, because one of the unique things about what we've done with this, so it's an all IP-based automated security and home automation product, fully integrated. It's all AT&T owned, operated, supported. We're one of the only companies in this industry actually selling out of our retail stores. So 2,000 retail stores actually have displays in them where you can go in and play with it. You can turn on, you can grab your smartphone, download the app. Once you have set it up, of course, but in our stores, you can sit and flip on the lights, open and close doors, change thermostats, and see it happening within the store. So if you guys haven't had that opportunity, please go, because it's pretty neat. This product is relatively new, but making really good progress. So second quarter of this year was our best net add quarter of the year. And again, I could go on and talk about this thing forever. I find that when I go out and show people this product, I can sell it. And it's a product you have to see. That's why it's important that we're launching this inside of our company and stores. Connected car is another area that we're seeing a lot of growth, or we will see a lot of growth. We've announced 7 different agreements with different car manufacturers and aftermarket manufacturer AudioBox. It's just fantastic what's going on here. So we talked about, you connect your house with Digital Life, obviously connect yourself and your family with tablets and smartphones, but now we've got the ability to go connect your car. So as we look at next year, we see that about 50% of the cars that roll off the line, brand new cars in the United States, are going to be connected. And we currently have a pipeline to actually be connecting 40% of those cars, and we've got our pipeline growing. So we see some pretty big opportunities as we look at connected car. Again, you're starting to see a pattern here. We're connecting your house, your car. It's about connecting everything. These big, ubiquitous IP-based data networks allow you to connect everything. And as you do that, we sell bigger data buckets, and thus you start to get a sense for the growth. Cricket, again, as I talked about a little bit a minute ago, is just a brand new product, going to be riding on a national network. with similar benefits to the AT&T product lineup, with the ability to simultaneously surf the web and talk, and just some phenomenal upside opportunities. They're building out their own distribution, flipping over existing distribution branding, but also building out distribution today. So we're seeing some upside on that. And the last one that we can talk about right now is just in-flight. So if we don't have your car, we don't have your house, we're going to get you on a plane because we know you want to be connected no matter where you are. And if you're like me, you can't stand those 10 minutes where you're not getting your email and you're not finding out what's going on, reading the news. But we'll now be able to support you with that in the near future. Looks like sometime next year, late next year, we may actually start launching that product as well. So a lot of growth opportunities, a really good transition in the way we're pricing and what that's doing from our existing business, and we feel pretty good about that. So there's a lot of competition, I mean, a lot of conversation about the pet competitive landscape today. Every morning you can pick up the news and see what's going on. And a lot of rivalry, and that's exciting. By the way, it's been that way in the second quarter. It was that way in the first quarter. It was that way last December. It's just a competitive market, competitive industry. That's what it is. We feel good about where we are, and we feel that our game plan is not going to be changed by temporary changes that are going on in this industry. We're in this for the long run. We've been investing for the long run, and we're going to continue to stick with the long run. It's all about the long-term sustainable growth as we look at it. So first and foremost, our customers want a network. When we look at the customers, if you have this beautiful smartphone in your pocket, you want it to work. You want it to work everywhere. You want it to be fast. And that is primarily what people are looking for. So that's what we deliver. We have the most reliable 4G LTE network, and as of today, it has 300 million pops covered. So that was our commitment. We're there. We feel great about that. I could go on forever about some of the network stats because it's one of the things I am the most passionate about. It being the guy that had to run New York back at the first launch, I know what it's like to be the guy out on the bleeding edge, and I can tell you those days are long gone, and we feel so proud of what our network team has done. It's just fantastic. So we cover 99% of the American population today, and with 300 million people on LTE, we're well along what we've committed to do. So we feel great about that. The next piece is we feel that our customer experience is extremely important. It's important how you serve those customers, not just what they do when they touch your network. It's what happens if they need to talk to you. What is that billing experience like? What's that sales experience like? What's that customer service experience like? And I'm going to dive into that one in a little more detail in a minute because that's one of the things I'm most passionate about. And I could go on that one for hours, but you guys won't let me. I know. We only have an hour. But we'll attack that in a few minutes. Strong customer value is really the pricing model I just told you about. It's now, we've gone to a pricing model. Customers are buying their own devices, bringing their own devices, leasing their own devices through Next, and then jumping on the non-subsidized pricing plan called Mobile Share Value. And we believe that value proposition is fantastic. And we saw it in the second quarter with the lowest churn we've ever seen, maybe one of the lowest, the low mark for the industry in total, 0.86 postpaid churn per quarter. Was the best churn we've ever had. And we attribute that heavily to that value proposition we have out there. And so we're just feeling great about all those things. So we feel it's about the long term, network first, how you interact with customers, when you do have to interact with customers. You put those things, you do it right, you make it a very fair value proposition, and we feel really good about how we stand competitively. And by the way, we actually feel really strong. We feel like we're in a very strong position. All right, talk about customer experience a little bit. Probably don't get too much of this, but it really comes down to how do customers touch you? When they interface with you and your company and your brand, how does that happen? And what are you doing about all the parts of it? And it's easy to look at what's most important. It's the most important things, the things you touch the most. So when we look at it, when we look at the customer experience, you touch the network all day, every day. If you're like me, you wake up. Actually, some of you guys probably wake up earlier than me. You're probably up at 4:30. I think I have a feeling. But first thing, you look at your phone, anything going on, any messages, maybe that was your alarm, maybe you have your music on it. You have almost your whole life on that thing. You have your contacts. I don't know how many of you can actually know your family's phone numbers without looking at your phone, but I don't, right? You lose your phone, it powers out, what happens? I don't know what my wife, don't say to my wife, but I'm not sure. But you realize how much you need these products. And so the first thing is customers expect very high reliability on that, and we feel great about where we are. So network, fantastic. You look at price value, we talked about that. I think churn is an indication. We've got a pretty good price value program out there, especially when sitting on top of that fantastic network. Talk about customer care and sales. These are two things where we've taken a lot of time and energy, put a lot of time and energy over the last couple years. And it really comes down to how do you listen to your customers? And America's changing. American business has changed. We've brought some new language into the last couple years about net promoter scores, employee engagement, and all these different things. And we are deep into that. We've been deep into this for a while. And so we survey our customers every day after every transaction. We can tell you exactly how they feel about our customer service and our sales experience. We get comments from back on that. We're tracking trends to see is it getting better, getting worse. We do not let our employees ask you for a score. If we find that, they get coached heavily. That is not the kind of thing we're trying to do. We actually want to make sure we're fixing the experiences and working on those experiences, and both from a sales and service. And we're starting to get really good feedback from third parties. So we've gotten we've won different awards along the way. Sales, as a matter of fact, we've won our third consecutive J.D. Power Award for our purchase experience. We feel fantastic about that. And it's something we've worked on for years. And by the way, winning that award is not the end state. We don't stand up and cheer because we won an award. We find that as just something nice to take along the journey as we move down this path. We actually set out to work on our sales and service experience probably about 3 or 4 years ago. We benchmarked ourselves against the rest of the players in our industry. And then we looked at our industry. We found that our industry was actually below the Department of Motor Vehicles. I don't know how you guys feel about the DMV. You guys, everybody love that? Everybody's into that one, right? I love that DMV. That experience sitting there waiting in line is fantastic. I'm sure they're getting better. But just as a reference point, that is not a good thing to find out when you have to go talk to your boss and say, hey, guess what? This is how good we are, you know, and you had to keep lowering the bar, lowering the bar. And so as an industry, that's where we were. And then within that industry, we were not the best. We were not proud of where we were. But that's a humbling thing to take full scale of where you really are. And that set us on a full path to re-engineer our processes and how we serve customers. And so today when you walk into our stores, you'll find different people. We hire differently. We train differently. We dress them differently. We coach them and manage them differently. And it's all about serving that customer. And we measure our leadership engagement, how well are we engaged with those employees. And so we have employee net promoter scores. We've got customer net promoter scores. And we put a lot of weight behind that, improving that. And so that's a lot of what drove this, and it's just the culture that you create and how you constantly improve things and the way you hold people accountable is very, very different. So all in, we're proud of it. Couldn't be happier to win those. That certainly is a nice, stepping stone along the path to where we want to go, but we've got more work to do there. But step away from it. Why is that important? Because as we said, it's about creating sustainable advantages and how do we get sustainable growth? And we believe it's not just pricing elements or things like that. It has a whole lot to do with, one is your network, the product that you sell, the handsets you attach or the devices you detach on the end of it, and how do they work with that network. And then as customers want to interact with you, how does that service experience go? And so we're feeling pretty good about that entire bundle, and that's why we feel so strong about where we are today in the competitive environment. So that's a little bit about customer experience and competitive. I think I hit a lot of the competitive. It's just that's the strength. That's really as I hit this. You know, it's a long-term, sustainable, most reliable network. We're there. Customer experience. I hit that pretty hard, and then the value. All right. Am I going the wrong way?
Yeah.
That's why I'm looking at that going. Wait a minute. That looks like there we go. All right.
There you go.
Last up. I'm saying. All right. I'm pretty sure I hit that. Alright, so last up is just, so what did we do just recently? So we just announced another reorganization inside our business, and we look at this as really natural in the scheme of things. We integrated our wired and wireline businesses over the last few years, whether it be network or technology or customer service organizations have been integrated, and so we had a business services organization, a mobility organization. We put those two together under Ralph De La Vega, who was the CEO of a mobility business. Ralph's now going to run both mobility and the business solutions in a new group called the AT&T Mobile and Business Solutions Group. We think that's great. Our chairman has been talking a lot about why, and the reason is just making mobility and wireless centric in everything we do, including our enterprise business. So that's the reason why. We've also promoted Glenn Lurie, who was working on a lot of our new products that I talked about today, whether it be connected car and digital life. A lot of the new things that were going on is what Glenn was running. And so Glenn is now stepping in to be the CEO and president of the mobility business. And we think there's a lot more good things that will come out of this over time. So that's sort of what was going on behind that. And that's really it for the presentation.
Okay.
Barry?
Mind if we take a few questions?
Yeah, absolutely happy to take some questions.
Okay.
Yep.
You're all mic'd up if you want to grab a seat and
sure.
Be more comfortable. So, Steve, you said you could talk for hours
yeah.
about the network.
My wife tells
and
me that,
maybe
yeah.
not hours, but that's the core of
yep.
of the business. So, and as we talked about, you've been through an interesting, I guess, 7 years from the introduction of the iPhone, stressing the network. Can we talk about the progress that you made? What does the network look like today? Where are you? You know, give us some geek metrics, number of cell sites,
okay.
DAS deployments, small cell sites,
well, you're pretty good.
Spectrum density, you know, all the good stuff that, you know, you and I love. What is the state of the network?
Sure. I think the most interesting thing to say is, if you want a stat that I really like, is that our network has grown 50,000% in the last 7 years. There's not many scaled businesses that can talk like that. 50,000%. And to still be delivering the best, most reliable nationwide LTE network, I think is something that we're pretty proud of. 50,000%. I mean, it's almost hard to talk about that. We move over several petabytes a day across this network. So just as geek talk, that's kind of cool. That's a lot. No matter how you look at it, that's a lot of growth. That's a lot of pressure on an engineering team and a construction team to get out there and keep ahead of that growth. So right off the bat, that's where we are. The LTE deployment, as we had been giving guidance all along, is that we'd be about 300 million POPs covered by mid-summer.
Right.
We hit it. I think bingo, you could say we nailed that. It was announced really this morning, so I'm not announcing that, but I'm happy to say that we got there. Another thing which we've done is we've been densifying our network. We're putting a lot more cell sites. Densifying is the term around just putting more and more cell sites. Because you have two ways to increase coverage. Either you add more spectrum or you add more cell sites. Is the two key ways you can do that. And so we call that densifying. So densifying is you had four sites, you go to five, you go to six, you go to eight. All that, what that does, allows you more capacity on those existing cell sites. It gives you better in-building penetration. So we've been on a tear densifying our network. We feel really good about that. Also with the Leap acquisition, we got a lot of additional cell sites and spectrum. So the Leap cell sites are being integrated into our network at this time, creating even more densification. So where we are today is just going to get better. In addition to that, when you look at it from a spectrum perspective, because spectrum often comes up, you
right.
know, what are you getting, what are you seeing from a spectrum perspective, we feel great about where we are today, and we're happy with where we are, and you can see it in our metrics. You can see that the spectrum we have is in play and performing very well. But as our customer needs change, we're going to need to change too. And we'll need more as our customers demand more. And video is becoming an important part of everyone's experience on their smartphones, their computers, in their hands. And as you do that, we certainly will need spectrum. We generally operate and buy to make sure that we're comfortable in about a 3-year window. And so we feel pretty good about, you know, our headroom that we have. But we know that, you know, as customer changes, we'll need more. Really proud to say and happy to say that as of yesterday, we closed the acquisition of some spectrum that we had talked about. It was a company called Aloha. So it was AWS spectrum. I believe it was 49 licenses. So we closed that deal yesterday, and our engineers will be quickly moving that and putting that into play. And it's really valuable. The locations were some big pop high urban areas. So we feel great about getting that behind us. Those were more, you know, generally smaller plays, just trying to fill in pockets, but Aloha was a great, great acquisition. So proud of our team that got that done. And there's two other auctions coming up, in the near future. One is, AWS spectrum, and the other one's around, broadcast spectrum. So, there's two auctions coming up. I can't talk much about those, but, you know, we publicly stated that we plan to, you know, try to participate in those auctions as well. So we feel pretty good about where we are. So I think, you know, to summarize that, we feel great, you know, having the ability to say that we're the most reliable, you know, network, three nationwide LTE network is a great thing and backed up with all the statistics that you can imagine to prove it. And so we feel great about that given, you know, what you talked right. about earlier, being the kind of the first in from a smartphone perspective, and you know, Manhattan, Midtown was kind of the core of everything that happened in the country at that point. At least it feels like it from my perspective. But we feel good about what we've done and where we are from densification spectrum and everything else. And the network is performing well.
Okay. Maybe you can elaborate on that last point, because I'm curious from a competitive standpoint. We hear a lot of claims from, you know, from other carriers. What kind of metrics can you back up in terms of talking about where the AT&T network is today versus the competitors out there?
You know, I really can't talk much about the competitors, but I can tell you we have a nationwide footprint. We cover 99% of the U.S. population.
Mm-hmm.
I'm quite certain that that's not always the case. So we feel proud about the breadth and ubiquity of our coverage because customers expect it.
Right.
I just got back from vacation in Alaska. My last state, by the way, I committed to my kids I wouldn't go outside the United States until I hit all 50 United States, every state in this country, because I'm a proud American. And I got them to go to me, Alaska, and our coverage was fantastic in Alaska. And that was not the case with many other people on the boat. So it was neat. So I think we feel pretty good about our coverage position. And then, as you said, it's breadth of coverage is important, but it's also your ability to get inside, you know, the niches where people go. It's that football stadium, it's that baseball stadium, it's the, you know, whatever, about to get into college football, you get to a Penn State game, you get to a Rutgers game, it matters.
Nice.
And it's unbelievable the amount of demand on these stadiums these days because everybody's taking a video. And everybody goes in and wants the video and then texts their friends who are all probably watching it on TV anyway, but they're there and they want to show it. And that puts some pressure on your network. But we feel pretty good about where we are. And we've announced some things in the city here about working with the subways and the mass transit. We were the first to announce and the first to jump in. So that's just an element of going underground.
Right.
So we're up in the buildings with distributed antenna systems. We're at the street level with, you know, all of our macro sites and small cells as we're working on. Also built Wi-Fi out throughout the city, particularly in Manhattan. You see a lot of the parks we've got Wi-Fi in.
Right.
And so generally we feel pretty good about where we are.
So I guess one of the challenges for probably consumers as well as investors is price versus quality. On the one hand, AT&T, the original telecom brand name, over a century of innovation, close to a century and a half, I guess, of innovation. The network you just talked about, all of the customer service resources that you guys have put in place. On the other hand, we're seeing some carriers out there starting to compete and talk and advertise a bit more on price. And yeah, that's becoming a challenge. And you guys have responded pretty quickly and pretty aggressively, I think, in the marketplace. How does AT&T balance not, you know, just selling on price because you've got a premium product in the marketplace,
yep,
and getting the full and fair value for what you've invested in for the folks in this room, the investment community?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and you're seeing different companies positioned differently, but we feel and we know by talking to our customers what they really want is fair value. They understand the value. But they want that network to be superior. This thing is your lifeline. It's everything. It's your remote control for your life, right? It's everything. For me, it controls my TV. I can buy, order DirecTV while I'm on the road. I can call. I can listen to music. I can do everything. So when something's that important to you, I'm not sure price is the most important thing. And you got to be reasonable and you got to be fairly priced, and we are. But as we listen to our customers, we know first and foremost they want network. And they want to have a very good experience when they interact with us.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we look at that and study that, that's why, you know, as I mentioned earlier, it's most important to us is to have a great network, and we feel fantastic about where we are with that network. It's great to have a value proposition that works.
Right.
And that's why between Next and Mobile Share Value, we think we have that, and we see it in our churn, so we're getting good feedback from our customers. I feel really strong about that. And then last is when customers want to interact with you, can you do it in a way that is easy for them, it's seamless, and it's fair and reasonable? Customers don't expect credits all the time. They just expect to get things corrected. And we spend so much time making sure that that service model is appropriate and working, and we're getting great feedback on that as well. So it's not all about one. It's about having the full package. And first and foremost, it's about the quality of your network. And when you have that, you're in a good spot. So we feel strong about where we are, and we like where we are.
Right.
We're thinking long term.
Right.
We're going to be here.
You know, another thing that's a relatively new innovation in the industry, you touched on this, is the way consumers buy and own their handsets. And from the investment community standpoint, it's a bit confusing. The accounting is changing and all. I know you're not a finance guy, an accounting guy. I'm not going to ask you the GAAP questions on how you account for that. I'll ask your IR, your people later on.
Yeah, I actually did see it yesterday. I had a guy map out all the T accounts so I could understand it fully, and it was impressive to see. It's neat. So
that makes one of us up here that understands it.
But I can't say I understood it, but I watched it. It was fascinating.
From a consumer standpoint, from a marketing standpoint, I've heard carriers say that the customer appreciates a low out-the-door price. That's what they're looking at. On the other hand, you know, previously you used to subsidize handset prices, so what a great value. You're giving somebody a $650 device for $200. AT&T has had great success. Your brand name for it is AT&T Next. You talked about the 50% of customers that elected for that on your postpaid business in 2Q. How do you think about that from a customer choice and as well from an AT&T standpoint? Is that your preferred route to market with the Next program?
It is. We believe that the two-year model, subsidized model, is it's outdated. Mm-hmm. And it started when people were buying little flip phones, and you had your little, you know, it's almost kind of fun to look at them these days, right? It was just a phone, that's all it did. What do you mean you can't get on the internet? Mm-hmm. But the cost of those devices at the time were probably $80 to $100 cost. Mm-hmm. So subsidizing, you know, $40, $50 on that was one thing, and all of a sudden you move your pricing model and the kind of products that are, you're trying to use that same model and move up to $700, it's a different value. And it just was time to make the change. And so, you know, our next product is essentially, as you highlighted, I mean, so there's three ways you can come in and get our best service pricing. One is through Next. And the Next is great because right out, the customer walks out the door, as you highlighted, nothing down, and so it's cash-free. But you got to be careful with that. So we've constrained. We don't let every customer get access to that new customer. There's certain credit classes which we won't allow because we're trying to protect that receivable stream, and we feel good about where that sits today. Mm-hmm. So that's Next. The customers have the option to really two options. You can buy yourself a 12-month upgrade program. So you're always getting that hottest, you know, fanciest, coolest new phone. I love that one. And then there's an 18-month program. A lot of people actually were seeing a bias toward the 18. And then your monthly financing fee goes down. So you know, you take a pretty high-end phone, and today on a 12-month, it might be $32, $33 a month on your bill. Equipment revenue. You go to an 18, it's probably $27 or so, right? Mm-hmm. So, but that way, customer pays for that monthly, but their monthly service fee has gone down. Alright? So, you know, trade off from a customer perspective, they love it, no cash out the door.
Right.
They have the ability to get a brand new phone either 12 or 18 months. Now they have to hand in and return their old phones. Part of the way this works is in the trade-in. So we get good value on those trade-ins. That's probably, you're all doing math in your head saying, wait, this doesn't work. Well, part of it is the value that we get on those trade-ins. So we give you this phone, you give it back to us at the end of that term. We can then use that phone for lots of different things. We can give it to our prepaid business and get a tremendous value, new value, on the prepaid side of our business. So all in, customers love it. It's about net neutral, you know, on average. If you look at what happened to our service revenue, you put back equipment revenue, those two will normalize themselves. There was some pressure early on in the first quarter when we gave the mobile share value pricing to a lot of customers before they had to upgrade, and so you saw some service revenue decline. But as the year goes on, in order for customers to keep that pricing, they have to either go to a no commit or they have to go to a Next. And so as they do, and we get to this real heavy period in the back part of the year with Iconic launch and holidays, we'll see a tremendous spike in our upgrades, and you're going to see that equipment revenue rise. Oh, and we still feel really good about that. So that's sort of it's talking to you guys about what you do. But from a customer perspective, it's really the 12, 18, and zero down going out the door.
Right.
Yeah. So it's gotten a lot of praise.
Yep.
Barry, if I can, a question real quick. You've talked a lot about the customer experience, and you've just kind of walked through what the value proposition is to the customer, both from a pricing standpoint and from a network, a service standpoint. Yeah, I think nirvana is always brand loyalty. Right? IBM, Apple certainly have demonstrated that brand loyalty. More service-oriented organizations, I think of USA as a military individual, USA has significant brand loyalty, right?
Yeah.
Really, nirvana for you, in my mind, would be brand loyalty, right? Where somebody says, hey, this is the brand that I go with. Regardless of pricing, there are a number of reasons why I'm committed to this, and like many of us who have Apple tattooed on our back, because it's the product that we like and love, right? It's been indoctrinated to our lives. Is that initiative, or is it just beating your competitors on service and knowledge. Is that an identified initiative within your organization, brand loyalty?
I'm glad you asked. That's great. It is. And you know, from a network perspective, we're benchmarking ourselves heavily around just key statistics, drop calls, data throughput, total coverage, and we feel great on every one of those. The broader brand question, we're working on heavily on the servicing side of this. So when I talked about when we first benchmarked ourselves against our competitors and our industry, we didn't like where it was. It was below the DMV. And we set our sights at that point to start going after and targeting companies that you just mentioned. So it's the USAAs, it's the Starbucks, it's the Ritz-Carltons are probably some of the top companies measured through, and there's different measures, but the measure we like is the willingness to recommend measure. And those guys just do, those companies have done a fantastic job of making it easy to do business with. Their product and their pricing are so well aligned that you get what you expected. There's no surprises in that. And so when I say we're real happy about winning 3 J.D. Powers, we're not happy until we get up in that club. And so as we're driving it, that is our goal. That's my point, is these are just stepping stones on where we're really heading. We feel great about where we are, but from a sales and servicing perspective, we're probably only about halfway, given exactly what you just asked. Great question. You got it.
We'll bring the mic over for the
We had briefly touched upon pricing competition, and you know, you're talking about making switches to make sure people understand what they're really getting. Let's say you have a notional voice plan that today costs $60 or $80. But where do you see that going in, where do you think that would be in about 3 or 5 years based on today's trends?
I mean, that's a little too far out of my headlights, 3 to 5 years, but let's just talk in year. What you've seen from a service revenue perspective, as we took the subsidies out of our pricing, you see the decline on a service level basis. But as those next equipment revenues come back, you see the equipment revenue line drive up. And so, you know, we feel that those two are going to normalize themselves. So there's a dip and then it's going to come back up. Particularly on the back half of the year, we think it's going to come, the equipment revenue is going to accelerate quite a bit. I really don't know and couldn't even predict what's going to happen down the road, but we're pretty comfortable with where we are. I don't know what the competitive forces will look like three or four years down the road.
Well, just as a follow-up to that then, what type of visibility do you feel you have? Like, if I were just going to say, how far out do you feel you can reliably predict? What's the answer to that?
You look at so many different things going on in the industry. I think we can easily predict this year. Next year, we'll probably have a pretty good handle on. So it's, you know, it's a tough question. I really can't predict pricing in the future. I wish I could. I'd be where you guys are. I'd be doing what you guys do. That's probably about all I'd say.
Thank you.
Let me throw one more wrinkle into that that question and that discussion. So we've talked about competitive factors. We've talked kind of on a linear basis as the industry looks today. But people, you guys have talked about introducing broadcasting and using your cell phone to look to view video. You've got some really cool initiatives. You mentioned connected car, controlling your home from the device. So I guess there's the potential for AT&T to break out of that rut of, you know, $60 a month for a bucket of voice, a bucket of minutes, and start to look at this as a more value-added, high-end product and leverage the value of the AT&T brand. So,
that's a great way to answer that same question. What we're seeing is a shift in different elements of pricing and what people are paying. We've taken voice and text and made that part of access. And then we made the variable being your data bundle. So customers can choose if they want a huge bundle, small bundle, make it a shareable. But as you attach more and more items onto your account, whether it be a tablet, whether it be your car, whether it be your home, whether, you know, whatever, I have 6 kids, you can't imagine how many things I've got connected in my house. It's that data bucket that keeps going. And by the way, their ability to consume data is almost to no end. I had my son hit a 15 gig all by himself last month. I didn't know that was possible. It wasn't talking. I can assure you, it was not voice. It wasn't even text, even though there's a lot of text in there. That was all about video, and that was about streaming. So that was streaming video, streaming audio. Now, granted, I have the ability with our brand new My AT&T application, I can go in and turn him off. So he's what we call in the doghouse of data, and he will be there for at least 30 or 40 more days. 17-year-olds, right? Or he'll pay me back with interest. But what we're seeing is just the data buckets are taking off. I mean, year over year, the number of people buying a 10-gig data bucket for their account is substantial. When we look at the percent last year is about 29%. This year, it's almost 49%. People are buying a 10-gig bucket year over year. So when you want to know, you know, how do you predict, it's more about what people are going to use it for and the more endpoints you can put on that. When you put your house and you have video in your house, you got your car, and you got three elements of your car. You got the diagnostics in the engine, you got, you know, the elements of, say, navigation primarily and some communication in the front seat and in the back seat. It's all about entertainment. I don't know, those kids start watching movies and streaming things in the back, it'll eat up a lot of data. And so we see upside from that perspective. And that's more a mechanical question. I don't know how much, but if they're all like my kid, it's going to be good.
I attended the General Motors Analyst Day last year, and they actually spent a good portion for auto manufacturer talking about what you just talked about, and I know that that is now riding on the AT&T network.
It is. It's exciting. We built a lab down in Atlanta with cars in it, where a lot of our innovation, a lot of things that we're working on to work with car manufacturers, show them what we're capable of. We actually demoed through that site in Atlanta. It's pretty neat. And so, yeah, it's a lot of who's who in the industry showing up down there in our labs. So it's neat.
And I love the new product introduction, the doghouse of data. For,
yeah, you like that?
Yes.
That's my 17-year-old, hope he hears this. Yeah.
So maybe we can segue towards the lower end of the market, because you've done something pretty significant this year with the acquisition of Leap Wireless, and they're better known with the Cricket brand name. And you alluded to it a little bit, but I don't think it's gotten the full understanding of what you can do with that brand. You used to have the AT&T prepaid. You had the AO brand, which was in some markets. Now you have, I think the term is a stalker brand, so you can go out and you can fight the price wars with a different brand without diluting the AT&T brand. It's also, as you mentioned, an avenue. You're going to get all these handsets back in on trade-in.
Yep.
You can refurbish them. It's the same network, and now you've got a source of lower-cost refurbished handsets you can put on that Cricket. So I don't want to steal all your talking points, but talk about what's going on in prepaid, and then from a financial standpoint, the prepaid subscriber numbers are declining a little bit right now, but I'm guessing they ought to tick back up, benefiting from all we just talked about.
Yeah, so we finished the acquisition of Leap Cricket. You know, they were not operating in Manhattan, but they were operating in Philadelphia and a lot of the markets around the country. They were an ace player, all-you-can-eat, small geographic network, really good quality network, but they were very geographic in how they operated. They priced an all-you-can-eat, and it was an interesting business model. It was great. And Metro PCS was the other. Metro has also been absorbed, but we picked up Leap, and it took some, you know, it takes some energy. First thing we had to do is take our AO business, which we had just launched, and we can merge those two organizations together. You have to go through all the sorting. Got that done. We took all the distribution, rebranded it. So existing distribution, we rebranded into the Cricket brand. So it's a new Cricket brand. There's some migration of customers to get them onto our LTE network. And so we're in that, coming out of that process. And you'll see us starting to get more aggressive. And you nailed it. The beauty of it is it's a brand that is not associated with AT&T. And so if we need to get very aggressive, we have the ability to do it with a brand that can sit on a shelf next to it, but does not potentially impact our postpaid business and any other aspects. So we love it. It's a fantastic way. At the same time, we kept our traditional prepaid product, which is called GoPhone. It's AT&T GoPhone. It's a branded product. We sell through the same distribution points as we sell our postpaid business. So we love the separation because we could take one and turn it into a more aggressive brand. So it feels good. We see some upside in that one. A lot of opportunity.
Do we have a question over here?
My question is around the unlimited data. You have some customers, I think, that initially bought into the Apple iPhone, had unlimited data. I think they're grandfathered in. How does that work? And, you know, just share some thoughts around that.
Yeah, I mean, that is, you know, unlimited is an interesting thing when you've got a resource, a spectrum resource. It's not unlimited. Spectrum is not unlimited. And so a lot of the folks that are still out there with unlimited, you know, they use it. some extensively. Some don't even use it that much. They just like the idea of having it. But when we rolled out the new mobile share value pricing plans, we actually saw a pretty substantial number of customers actually migrate off unlimited plans into our usage-based programs. So I can't give you numbers, but we've actually seen that because they see the benefits of the full account, sharing a bigger data bucket with family members and being on one account across the family. There's some benefits. And now you can start to attach more and more devices on it, sharing that data bucket. They can't do that with the unlimited. So there's a tremendous value. And we like it because they're naturally migrating off. We're not doing anything unnatural. So it's some pretty good numbers. So we feel pretty good about it.
And then let's talk about wireline replacement. Under Project VIP, you've talked about a national strategy. How are you going to go deploying fiber, U-verse, in part of the more rural portions of the U.S.? You're going to rely on the wireless network, and you've also made commitments as part of the announcement of the DirecTV transaction to increase the broadband availability. Some of that will rely on the LTE wireless network. So let's talk about how that folds into the AT&T wireless strategy.
Sure. We've talked a bit about potentially rolling out wireless local loop, as we call WLL, broadband to 13 million or so, mostly rural pops. We like it. It's a great way to leverage our existing network. We'll do that through using existing towers, existing backhaul, spectrum. When you get out into rural areas, you don't have the same population density like you have in a Manhattan or Philadelphia or Boston or LA. And so as a result, you may have some capacity, spectrum capacity. And so what we're going to do is use that those resources, existing resources, to deploy a wireless local loop product. And we think we'll get 10 to 15 megabits a second down peak, even better off peak in some rural properties. And I think it's a fantastic experience. I own a house in Vermont, and you know, you live around Manhattan and Boston, so you don't think there's going to be rural places. Well, I own a house in Vermont. Let me finish with that. And I am not on the cable run. I happen to be just off the cable run. And I really want to get broadband up there for lots of reasons. One, to keep my kids from spending 15 gig when they're sitting downstairs. I've got great LTE coverage in my home, but my kids all want to do, you know, all kinds of stuff. And, you know, when I called the cable company and asked them if they could extend that loop to my house, they said, for $30,000, we'll run that loop one house over to you, and then you have to run it up your driveway. I said, you know, thanks. Appreciate the offer, but I'll look for an alternate solution because my kids can eat up 15 gig all day long before I get a payback on that $30,000. But anyway, there's just some customers that just don't have other alternatives, and so we think that the wireless solution is a great solution to help them. And we think we can get to about 13 million-ish. And we were looking at also doing some things with our fiber, direct fiber program to pick up a few more. So you've heard that, and I think in the DirecTV conversation in that context, yeah, you've heard some of that. So feeling good about that. And that's essentially how we would structure that and build that business.
So let's wrap this up with a financial question. Obviously, this is a financial conference, financial community. I'm not going to pin you down on the specific numbers, but we've talked about a lot of aspects of AT&T's wireless business, postpaid, prepaid, wireless local loop replacement. How should we think about the opportunity to grow revenue, expand EBITDA margins, and grow EBITDA as all of this takes place?
Mm-hmm. And so starting with revenue, first is you got to get back to the mechanics of what I early talked about, the difference between subscriber revenue and equipment revenue. So We took some timing issues on our subscriber revenue because we priced down some subscribers early on or just offered them a non-subsidized pricing model before they actually came to a non-subsidized device. So with Next, you'll start to see the timing of that catch up throughout the year. Many more upgrades going on in the back half of the year, so that's going to correct itself. So the revenue, you just have to look at combining ARPU or just service revenue with equipment revenue to truly understand what's going on. That's the dynamic first you have to understand. And when you get that, you understand the health of what's going on inside our revenue streams. In addition to that, with Next, we've seen some pretty good healthy increases in insurance revenue. Mm-hmm. So customers appreciate, a $700 device, $650 device. They tend to insure it and do a lot more with it than they did a $199 device. So we're seeing upside in insurance. We're seeing upside in some accessories, putting protections on those devices. So also the churn implications has been phenomenal as well. So all that means more subscribers, more top line revenue. From a margin perspective, there's a lot of things. One is, as we're upgrading customers on LTE, putting them on LTE smartphones, LTE is a more efficient network than our HSPA network.
Right.
So you've got a much more efficient network you're operating on. Your backhaul to that network is now more advanced fiber, metro Ethernet, Ethernet over fiber. So you've got efficiencies in your backhaul as well than just the spectral efficiencies. You also have the backhaul efficiencies. From a margin perspective, you also have the accounting, which I'm not going to get into the T accounts to explain because I might not get it right and might never become a CPA as a result. But you start to see a closer alignment of your equipment expense and your equipment revenue as opposed to the old model where the more customers you took on during a holiday, it was actually diluted your margins because you took the full subsidy and only realized the revenue over a two-year period. So under Next now, you realize, they realize in a similar time frame, and your margins don't take those rides as your volume increases to the same degree. So you end up with a more stable margin throughout the year. So you combine the growth opportunities on the revenue line with efficiencies of the network and the mechanics of what's going on inside the financial streams, you're going to see both good margin, you know, solid margins for the last two quarters of the year, and you'll start to see those dips we used to take start to normalize over time as more people get on to Next. And you're going to see some good, healthy top-line growth, both from data and from these other things that are kind of secondary to just the shift in the pricing model change. So we're feeling pretty good about it. We like where we are.
Okay. And with that, I think we're at our time. So I want to thank you.
Thank you.
I want to thank Steve Hodges. This was really very helpful.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much. Thank you for what you guys do. Thank you.